Cha-cha-cha.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we want to talk about the third leg of the stool of fiscal stimulus in the Biden administration. In previous weeks, we talked about the so-called COVID-19 relief plan program bill became an act called the American Rescue Plan. That was the $1.8 trillion spending. And then last week, we talked about the early outlines of Biden's tax plan here to raise some of the money to pay for that. And also here today, this week, the announcement of Biden's infrastructure plan. Now, except for the American Rescue Plan, the $1.8 trillion, which, as I've said in earlier shows, is really $1 trillion or less, according to the Congressional Budget Office. It's over 10 years. And in the first year here, when we need it the most, it's really maybe $800-900 billion, which is about what was spent here at the end of last year with another rescue, desperate rescue plan, about $866 billion. Which has dissipated in the first 2 months of this year. So the amount of the American Rescue Plan, the COVID plan, is really about the same size. And the question remains, will it dissipate in a couple months as well? That will be hard to tell because the economy is opening up at the same time. And it's hard to tell how much of the rebound in the economy will be due to just reopening it and how much due to the COVID-19 American Rescue Plan phase one here of the Biden fiscal stimulus. Okay, last week we talked about the tax plan, and these are just early outlines of what's going on. We'll see more when Congressional Budget Office does a deeper analysis here publicly of what's involved with the tax plan. But we'll talk about the tax plan a little bit more because over the past week we get a little more clarity here on what that is. But today, let's talk about Biden's infrastructure plan. This is the so-called $2.3 trillion, according to Wall Street Journal. I've seen it vary, by a couple hundred billion less, sometimes mentioned to $2 trillion. So, the infrastructure plan is more long-term stimulus, right? The short-term immediate stimulus was the American Rescue Plan. The infrastructure plan, by the way, is called the American Jobs Plan, right? AGP, American Jobs Plan, as opposed to American Rescue Plan, ARP. But we'll call it the infrastructure plan from this point on. These acronyms get confusing. The first thing you got to understand about any fiscal program, package, plan is you don't assess its effect simply because of its magnitude. In other words, how much is being spent. What's just as important is the timing of it. In other words, how soon and how much will be spent, in the near term. And then thirdly, its composition. Composition meaning how much goes here, how much goes there, et cetera, right? So magnitude, timing, and composition are important to understand and assess any of these plans, whether it was the rescue plan or whether it's now the infrastructure plan. I have a problem with the current infrastructure plan because it's $2.3 trillion over 8 years, but most of it is backloaded, meaning it comes in the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth year. It comes out, not right now, in 21 and 22, when we need it the most. In fact, there's going to be very little stimulus to the economy, and thus very little real jobs being created because out of the $2.3 trillion this year and probably next. Very little. It's backloaded. That's why guys like Larry Summers, who's been economists tied in with the banking system from the beginning, is saying, oh, I like the Biden infrastructure plan because it's backloaded, you see. No spending now. And the more you backload it, the more that if the Republicans get back in, they'll just end it. You know, they'll stop it. Backloading it means maybe. It's not for real. It's just maybe, right? Backloading it. Now, there's some other problems here with this bill as well, which I'll try to cover here. And in terms of the timing, it's not just being backloaded, but it won't even be passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. It's not even on the agenda to be taken up until July. And then you're going to have to figure, well, how long? You know, the dickering in the House, how long it'll take to pass it in the House. It'll probably pass in the House, although maybe not in its current form because, you know, we got blue dog Democrats like Manchin and Sinema and others who are really corporate shills who are going to try to tweak it and undermine it, just like they tweaked and undermined Biden's initial COVID relief, the $1.9 trillion, or actually is $1.8 trillion by the time it got out of the Senate. Right. And of course, as I pointed out in previous shows, the Congressional Budget Office research arm says only $1 trillion of that at most is authorized for spending this year. That's the old ARP, right? American Rescue Plan. I just jumped back to that. Right. Well, we got the same problem here with the infrastructure plan, and that is it won't be taken up until late summer. And then you don't know how long it's going to take to get through. Guess what? The U.S. Senate, with all its anti-democratic rules that have been built up over the decades here, not just the filibuster, a lot of other rules there that they can use to thwart public legislation that the people really want, and we've seen how well they do that, right? Even with, Democrats having 50 votes, you know, do they really have 50 with the Manchins and the Sinemas? No, they don't. Okay, so the point I'm making is the timing of this infrastructure plan is not very impressive. Not only is backloaded, but it won't really get passed this year. Maybe you'll see it take effect in 2022 to some extent, some of it, because most of it's backloaded, right? How much effect will it have on GDP? Very, very little in 2021, virtually nothing. And that means it won't have any impact on inflation. You know, the Republicans and conservatives and right-wingers are raising the specter now. Oh, all this spending, $2.3 trillion, is going to cause inflation, right? What if it doesn't hit the economy? Whatever inflation we have this year is not going to be due to the infrastructure plan. That's for damn sure, right? But we will have inflation. Why will we have inflation? Simply because businesses last year could not raise prices because of the pandemic and people just didn't have the money to buy. They couldn't raise prices. Some of them had to reduce their prices. And now as the economy begins to open up, they're going to test how much they can raise prices. They're going to test it. In many cases, they'll be able to do it because people are getting back to work. Other cases, they won't be able to do it. But whatever inflation we have will be due to this business attempt to recoup their price losses last year in revenues and profits. It won't be because of the stimulus, which isn't going to hit. The infrastructure isn't going to hit at all this year, right? And even the previous COVID rescue plan of Biden, we're looking at $800 billion maybe this year. If that, you know, probably even less than that because it's not a one-year plan, right? Even less than that will hit the economy. We'll figure, you know, $600-700 billion out of a total economy of $22 trillion at least GDP. That's a pittance. That's a pittance. That kind of spending isn't going to have any effect on inflation. So the infrastructure plan won't have any effect on inflation at all. And the COVID relief plan will have very, very minor. That's why the Federal Reserve says inflation is really only going to be 2.3%. You know, it was maybe 2% last year, maybe 2.3%. That's nothing. Ah, but they're using that argument. Oh, inflation, to try to stop it. Just as they're using the argument, you know, the McConnells and the Rand Pauls and all the corporate people behind them who pay their bills, right? They're using the argument, oh, the deficit is going to wreck the deficit. Well, as we've talked about in previous shows here, what's wrecked the deficit is Trump's $4 trillion tax cut passed in 2018, January 2018. That was $4 trillion, not one and a half. I'm not going to go over that explanation. Just listen to the explanations I've given several times why it was over $4 trillion. Why is it over $4 trillion? Because they estimated this huge 3.5% GDP growth, which would generate revenues, tax revenues, which didn't occur because of the pandemic. And they ignored $2 trillion in tax cuts to multinational U.S. corporations offshore. When you put those two factors back in, the Trump tax cut was over $4 trillion, 85% of which went to corporations and the wealthy 1% investors. 85% of that. I mean, what a travesty. And who created that plan? Goldman Sachs. Gary Cohn from Goldman Sachs was in Trump's administration. Steve Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs. They wrote that tax bill behind closed doors, and they pushed it out within a week, skipped a lot of the hearings, rammed it through, budget reconciliation, whatever, rammed it through down the Democrats' throat because they had neither House of Representatives or Senate majorities. And they pushed it through, and we were promised that, oh, it was going to have a tremendous effect on investment and job creation. Nada. Did not significantly increase investment and therefore jobs. Oh, it boosted some jobs in the oil patch. That's where most of the investment occurred. But it didn't occur throughout the economy in 2019. In fact, in 2019, business investment declined, even though he had the $4 trillion fully implemented in tax cuts. Business investment declined in the U.S. So this argument that business tax cuts create jobs is bogus. It's bogus. But what isn't bogus is that it certainly whacks government budget revenues and adds to the deficit and the national debt, which it did. Oh, but now, oh, the tax cuts, oh, let's forget about that. It's all this spending for people, right? And for infrastructure, that's going to raise the deficit. I mean, these guys are hypocrites. You know, the Rand Pauls and that faction and Mitch McConnell, the Democrats are going to get no votes out of these guys for anything. They didn't get it when they were under Obama, right? And they didn't get it under Trump. I mean, it's the same old game plan for McConnell, and that's scorched earth, economic scorched earth, right? No to everything that's proposed. So why are we trying to do bipartisanship, you know, if it's no? And why are we allowing the filibuster to continue when it's no? You're not going to get any cooperation out of the Republicans. So why even create the fiction of bipartisanship, you know? That's my take on this Trump tax cut. And okay, so what is the infrastructure plan, and what is Biden's plan to pay for the infrastructure? Once again, as I said, you got to look at composition as well as magnitude as well as timing. Okay, let's look at the composition here, the composition of the Biden infrastructure plan. Well, there's the two phases here. It's important to keep in mind there's two phases to this, three parts and two phases. The first phase encompasses two parts. This is what will be taken up in July and probably not get passed until the end of the year. This is traditional infrastructure, public works, as we would think of it, right? Roads, bridges, airports, right? Electric grid, public transport, water, railroads, right? That's what we call traditional infrastructure or public works. The second part of this is freebies to U.S. manufacturing. Well, what does that have to do with infrastructure? Nothing. And I'll explain it. But it's a big chunk of money as well. These two parts, the traditional public works and the manufacturing boost here, are phase one of Biden's infrastructure plan, phase one. And how much are they planning to spend in this? $620 billion in transport, $620 billion, right? Over 8 years now, backloaded, keep in mind. And $286 billion on buildings, $620 on transport, $286 on buildings. So, you know, we're looking at like $900 billion will be traditional public works, stretched out over 8 years and backloaded, okay? You know, they don't say that in the hype. Listen to Biden. He doesn't say anything about the backloading and the timing of passing of these bills. Okay, manufacturing. Well, let's go back and look at how the 620 in transport breaks out. Roads and bridges, $115 billion. You know, we got thousands of bridges that needed repair, and I understand 10 major bridges that are almost collapsing. $42 billion for airports and seaports. Don't forget, you know, airports got tens of billions of dollars under the previous COVID bills, and now we're going to give them $42 billion more. Okay. How much for the electric grid, upgrading electric grid? If you're going to have electric cars and electric this and that, you're going to have to upgrade that grid. That's $100 billion to upgrade the grid. Broadband, to bring broadband communications to the rest of the country. The U.S. is far behind everyone else in the world, advanced economies, $100 billion. Public transport, in other words, improving the public trains and buses and subways, $85 billion. Railroads, $80 billion. Why railroads get $80 billion? I don't know. You know? Well, maybe it's, you know, the public rail system there in the Northeast. Water, $111 billion, including getting rid of lead that still exists, you know, in many cities, you know, like in Michigan, we know about that, and other places. People are being poisoned all the time with all this lead, kids especially, and nothing has been done about it. Well, supposedly something will now be done about it. So the traditional infrastructure, public works, about $620 billion for transport, as I've described, and $286 billion for housing, a good portion of that for public housing for the homeless and so forth, but also to re-engineer buildings into smart buildings and more efficient buildings and so forth. Okay, so that's traditional. That will be in the proposals introduced for the first time by the U.S. House of Representatives in late July. On top of that, we've got $300 billion for manufacturing. Well, what does that have to do with infrastructure? Well, really not that much. But part of this will be $35 billion for new technologies and R&D, $35 billion. Okay, why is that? And $50 billion for semiconductor chips. Okay, that's like $100 billion for new chips. I mean, why does the government have to subsidize Intel and these guys to create new chips? I'll tell you why. This has to do with the tech war with China. Remember Trump and his tariff wars, his trade wars? It was really a cover for the tech war with China. At the very heart of the Trump trade war, tariffs, based on tariffs, was to get China to slow down its next generation technology development because it's about to leapfrog the United States. What are the next-gen technologies? Well, the next-gen technologies are artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and 5G broadband. And these are military technologies as well. So the U.S. in 2017 set out a policy under Trump to try to stop or slow down the Chinese. And it was at the heart of the trade bill, you see, or the tariff wars. You know, the proposals on paper looked, and in the media looked like, oh, it was about tariffs and getting them to buy more farm goods, et cetera. But really, the real plum there was to get them to slow down. And, of course, the Chinese would not slow down in this because it's not only military important, but it's the new industries that are going to spin off from cybersecurity, from 5G, from AI. Now, getting back to the $300 billion in the infrastructure proposal for manufacturing, $50 billion is for semiconductor chips. But you know what? This $50 billion is not for the chips that go into your phone. It's not for the chips that go into your laptop. No, no. These are custom chips for artificial intelligence. This is AI giving a big subsidy to U.S. semiconductor companies to take a big leap into accelerating its artificial intelligence chip development because it's necessary in order to have AI to have faster chips. It's necessary to have big databases, but it's necessary to flow the information from the databases into the software through these chips. So they're subsidizing artificial intelligence, $50 billion, and other R&D by $35 billion. Now, also part of the manufacturing is a push for electric vehicles in the U.S. And government purchase of electric vehicles themselves, direct electric vehicle purchases. That's $35 billion. And $174 billion to subsidize Tesla and GM to catch up and Ford to catch up with Tesla here and electric vehicles. In other words, these companies need to build out their own infrastructure of charging stations throughout the country if electric vehicles are really going to take off. And to do something about fast charges so you don't have to wait an hour in a gas station to recharge your vehicle, right? So the government's going to pay for that. We're going to subsidize Tesla and GM and all the rest. The government, in other words, you taxpayers, we're going to socialize that investment and privatize the returns for the companies. All right, so that's like $200 billion for the auto companies here and $100 billion for the semiconductor and other companies, right? That's the $300 billion. And you watch corporations like that one, they'll go along with that one, $300 billion. Mm-hmm. They won't like a lot of the public works that we're talking about, particularly if it's some of it goes for homeless housing. They won't like that. And they won't like the $137 billion to build new schools and to upgrade schools. No, they won't like that. The utility companies will like the $300 billion that they're supposed to get, you know, to move from natural gas and fossil fuels. They'll like that. What they won't like, any of them, corporations, capitalists, businesses, conservatives, Mitch McConnell, what they won't like is phase two of this infrastructure bill. What is phase two of the $2.3 trillion? I've just been describing the roughly $1.5 trillion, roughly, in long-term backloaded infrastructure spending on public works and manufacturing. I've just described that to you. But there's a phase two. Biden is breaking out phase two from phase one, which means phase two probably won't even be taken up until next year. What is that? That's $400 billion being proposed out of $2.3 trillion for home infrastructure development, home, clean energy for home, right? Clean energy and job retraining of workers that will lose their jobs in fossil fuel industries to retrain them, right? That will take tens of billions of dollars. There will be tax credits once again for clean energy. There will be tax credits for businesses that will enter clean energy. I'm talking about solar and wind and so forth, right? There's a creation of a civilian climate corps, you know, sort of paralleled on the 1930s Conservation Corps. Civilian Conservation Corps. Of course, it's only funded basically with $10 billion, but to get it going, in other words, it's jobs related. That's the part that's heavily jobs related. It's the home in-home $400 billion part two, phase two of the infrastructure bill. And they won't like that. The Republicans and capitalists will not like that, and they will oppose it tooth and nail. And, you know, I think Biden Democrats know that. That's why they broke it out. I think that this is the sacrificial lamb in the infrastructure bill. They'll agree in 2022 probably to gut the hell out of that or drop it altogether, right? In the meantime, what they'll push is the public works, which will create a lot of construction jobs, make a lot of construction companies happy and transport companies happy, make the auto companies happy, right? Make the semiconductor companies happy, and other tech R&D, $35 billion, right? And the utility companies, of course, they're in that mix, and they're going to do very well as well. But won't do so well is spending on education and school development and school buses, right? Electrify the school buses, and in-home energy, $400 billion in job retraining and so forth. That they won't like. Okay, that's the my first take on the infrastructure spending bill, which is going to be a dogfight. I think some of it will get through, not as much as they're saying, but not until the end of the year. We'll see some part of it probably taking effect next January 2022, so nothing in this year. And the tech companies will get a big subsidy here, right? And the tech war. You see, Trump tried to stop the Chinese tech development with tariffs, and he failed, totally failed. China did not. And I was writing on that to a great extent as well, all throughout 2017, 18, and 19. My book, The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Promise from Reagan to Trump, published last year, in a long section of the section on Trump, the chapter on Trump, I explained that tech war, how the trade war was really a tech war with a cover of farm subsidies and so farm expenditures by China and so forth. Not that the farm subsidy wasn't an important part of it, but the real core of it was to try to stop China tech. Look, there's a tech war between the U.S., and it's a military war, and it's a war for the new industries that are going to be developed in this decade. And it's based on tech. It's based on these next-gen technologies. And, when you look at it, there's only two countries in the world that are expanding technologies, new technologies. That's the United States and China. If you look at the tech patents that have been filed and for the last decade or so, about 45% is U.S. filings and about 45% are China filings. There's only two players in technology and technology development. The rest of the world is left behind. You know, the rest of the 10% is, Europe and Japan and maybe a few others, right? It's a two-way race. Tech is a two-way race now. And it's the future. Trump's tariff approach failed. What Biden is doing is subsidizing American corporations to help them catch up and surpass the Chinese. That's what this is about. That's what that $300 billion is really about. It's next-gen technology, especially AI. What is AI? What is artificial intelligence? You see this thrown around a lot. What is that? Well, I'll tell you, very simply, it's three things. One, it's increasing databases of information, massive databases, which have been created and are continuing to create. You got to have these massive databases. You have to have just as massive computing power, AI chips, in order to process all that information. And then you apply advanced statistical algorithms, software algorithms, to the databases and to the technology, the chips, right? The processing power. Those three elements, processing power, databases, and software, advanced statistical algorithms. That's what AI is about. The objective of AI is to simplify decision-making so that machines and software can make the simple decisions for human beings, and you can lay off all those folks in retail and services and manufacturing, too, and get rid of them, you know, because they may not show up to work. They take lab, bathroom bag breaks. You got to pay them overtime, et cetera, et cetera. They leave. You got to hire new people. Oh, business would rather have a machine, a software machine in particular, since there's not much maintenance there, to make these simple decisions and lay off all these people. That's coming. By 2025, McKinsey Consultants has projected that 30% of all the occupations in the U.S. will either be eliminated over the next decade, accelerating towards the end of the decade, or their hours will be drastically reduced. We're going to have software making a lot of these decisions, not human beings, and these entry-level jobs, low-paid service entry-level jobs, are going to go away. Structural unemployment will rise, has begun to rise. More people will be gig work, you know, having to work 2-3 jobs in order to make a living. Yeah. That's the future here. On top of this massive short-term cyclical unemployment crash that we've just had. On top of that, right, we have a cyclical wax to the hiring and employment. Occurred in 2008-10. Remember that one? Right? We had a very slow recovery. It took us 7 years to recover the jobs. Now we got the COVID whack here, which may not be going away, by the way. That whack, it's going to take at least another 7 years to recover the jobs that were lost. And in the meantime, a lot of those jobs will not be recovered because of structural unemployment driven by artificial intelligence that I just mentioned. The job picture is not very bright, particularly low-level entry jobs. Oh, there'll be a lot of very high-level STEM jobs. You know, those are the jobs of the future. But boy, you better get an advanced education if you want to play a role there. Hey, if you want to be an entry-level data scientist, you know what you start out in terms of pay in California? You know what you start out with? A year? $150,000 to $200,000 a year as a data scientist. And if you're an AI engineer, it's like $250,000 or more a year. You want a high-paying job? Well, you better get yourself 6-7 years of math, and you'll get it. And programming, you know, programming and R and some of these, esoteric, program languages. Those are the languages of artificial intelligence. You know, the big entry-level jobs will be for those students who can combine a STEM education with advanced math and statistics and programming capability. All right. Or, you know, you can go take hotel management and something and work part-time in a hotel, and they're disappearing too. Okay. So, just to wrap up and summarize once again, when you look at these fiscal spending bills, whether it was the ARP already passed or the infrastructure coming, you got to look at not just the magnitude, how much, that's all the media tends to promote. You got to look at the timing. When is it going to hit the economy and actually get spent and boost GDP and jobs and cause inflation to some minimal extent? Right? When? The timing? And you got to look at the composition. The problem with the composition of the infrastructure bill is that it's broken out into two parts, public works and manufacturing now, in-home later, $400 billion later. I don't think we're going to see that, much of that, if at all. Now, some will argue, the Democrats can use budget reconciliation. That's where they bypass these ridiculous Senate anti-democratic rules like filibuster, but others as well, right? That's when they bypass that. The budget reconciliation. But what they're not telling you is that there are Senate rule limits on how many budget reconciliation bills you can push through the Senate. We've already pushed one, American Rescue Plan, right? They're talking about phase one of the infrastructure plan. What about the tax plan, right? That's budget. You can only push three a year, you see, only three. What then happens to phase two of infrastructure if you can't go budget reconciliation? Nothing. Nada. It won't pass, right? And we still don't know what the Blue Dog Democrats will do to try to stifle even budget reconciliation. You know, we saw the Manchin and Sinema, the Blue Dogs and the Democrats in the Senate, squash the $15 minimum wage. We saw that happen. By the way, that would have provided $400 billion a year in direct stimulus, more than any other measure, and that's why they cut it out, probably. Well, you know, on that $15 minimum wage, Biden had promised that, but then he met with big corporations a week before he said, no, I don't want it. Yeah, they lobbied him, the big corporations in the White House, and he dropped it. Yeah, that's what happened to that. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the tax provisions to pay for the infrastructure and the AAR American Rescue Plan already passed. Well, you know, Biden is proposing to take back some part, roughly half, of the $4 trillion tax cuts that were provided for corporations, non-corporate businesses, investors, and individual wealthy people. Right? Half of it, that's all. And, you know, they're having a heartburn in the Republican camp, even to reverse half of it. The corporate tax used to be 35% before Trump got his hands on it. That reduced it to 21%, a whopping 14% cut that they've enjoyed the last 2 years, that they didn't plow back into creating jobs and investment that they sent offshore or they sent it to the stock market. That's where the stuff has been going, the bubble. Okay, so Biden will restore it to 28, from 21 back to 28, and that was halfway, right? However, not immediately. This will be slowly increased to 28%. You're not saying how slowly, over the 8 years. We'll see if that one's backloaded too, huh? Okay, interesting. It's not really a full restoration right now. And then there is what's called this foreign tax, corporate foreign tax, right? What did Trump do for foreign corporations? The $2 trillion tax cut I said that they were given, what did he do, right? He cut it from 35% on foreign earnings. He cut it down to 10.5%. U.S. corporations got a bigger tax cut on their offshore operations than they did on their domestic operations under Trump. Under Trump, it went from 35 to 21%, the corporate rate. Okay? Under Trump, the offshore went from 35 to 10.5%. And even lower. How did it go even lower? Well, there were other rules as well that said, oh, you know, if you corporation, XYZ, U.S. corporation, let's say Cisco Systems or something, right, ended up paying 10% to foreign governments tax, well, you could deduct that from the measly 10.5% you had to pay Uncle Sam. So, in other words, they didn't pay anything anymore under Trump. Zero. Zilch. They could offset it and offset it based on all the countries in the world, not country by country. You see, so this was called the guilty tax. Yeah, guilty, G-I-L-T-I, the guilty, you know, which was at least $1 to $2 trillion, the guilty tax, reducing it from 35 to 10.5, then minus whatever you paid foreign countries, right? And then on a, you know, world basis. They paid nothing. They paid nothing, you know, essentially. $2 trillion over 10 years. Well, Trump is going to raise this to 21%. 21%, and then maybe over time to 26% by the middle of the decade. So, and they're going to have to pay an alternative minimum. In other words, if they get away paying nothing, they still have to pay an AMT, an alternative minimum tax. How much of that, we don't know. So the AMT for corporations, which was abolished pretty much under Trump, is being brought back as part of the Biden deal. So is the inheritance tax. You know, the inheritance tax has an exemption. And it used to be, I think, like $3 million of your asset when you died could be deducted, $3 million for each, you know, person in the family. So I think it was like $6 million. The first $6 million they didn't pay taxes on when they sold their assets on death and gave it to their inheritors, right? Well, under Trump, that was raised to $23 million exemption. $23 million exemption, right? So they paid virtually nothing at all, nothing. You know, the inheritance tax was pretty much gutted, and it brings in quite a bit, or it did used to bring in quite a bit. You know, I'm talking about trillions of dollars in tax revenue for the federal government. That was reduced. I don't have the latest figures, but virtually nothing here. Well, they're going to try to restore it to, I think, $5.5 trillion exemption, So halfway, restore the 11.5 million per person previous exemption to 5.75 million. All of this is, by Biden's tax plan, is to halfway it. In other words, massive cuts under Trump, and we'll take half of it back, half of it, right? And, you know, that's the old game, the tax shell game, as I call it, been going on for 40 years now. The corporate tax rate is raised when everyone says, oh, you know, it's too low, we need to raise it. But at the same time, they open up more rules and loopholes. So the corporations and the rich, you know, on paper, they pay a higher tax, but they get more corporate loopholes that they can manipulate. Oh, and then when the loopholes become too exaggerated and they start getting bad press, oh, they close the loopholes, right? But they lower the tax rate. They go back and forth, back and forth. And the Republicans, each time we have one of these events, tax events, give big cuts to their friends, right? The Democrats come in and, oh, they only take part of it back. And you do that over 40 years, right? Give them 10 with one hand and take back 5 with the other. And, boy, the 5 difference adds up over time. And that's exactly the case. It's added up. There's tens of trillions of dollars in freebies and taxes been given to the wealthy 1%, their businesses and corporations, that if we close those loopholes and went back pre-Reagan, pre-neoliberalism, which begins with Reagan, these are neoliberal policies, this tax cuts for rich investors again and again and again. If we go back to tens of trillions of dollars could be raised immediately. And what would happen? Well, since most of this tax cut money has been going into stock markets and bond markets and derivatives and so forth, oh, they wouldn't have as much to play with there and boost the prices there. And yes, their asset values would collapse, right? But the rest of the economy would grow. Right? So it's really a trade-off between wealthy investors, stock and bonds and so forth, wealth being created hand over fist, and the rest of the country and workers and people trying to earn their way being shortchanged for 40 years. Right? Turn it around. Well, the Democrats only turn it around a little bit. Right? And then the Republicans come back in and they boost it up again. And that shell game goes on and on and on. And that's what's been happening for 40 years now. 40 years, right? By the way, this alternative minimum tax restoration that Biden proposes here is only 15% rate on companies making over $100 million, right? And he doesn't touch other big tax tax cut loopholes here, like net operating loss and foreign tax credit and so forth. All that is still retained. It's loopholes, see? Okay, so, you know, we've got this tax shell game, and Biden's proposing to make these multinational corporations who got a $2 trillion tax cut pay something, right? Pay something. Pay the 10.5%, right? Not allow the foreign country's tax bill to be subtracted from the 10.5% owed to Uncle Sam, right? That's a proposal to close that loophole, right? And also to close the global accounting loophole here and make it country by country, 10.5%, country by country, which makes them pay more, technically, right? To cut another loophole that allows companies to exclude 10%, reduce their foreign assets by 10% when it comes to calculating the 15% alternative minimum corporate tax on offshore, right? Oh, there's all kind of loopholes behind these corporate tax rates, you know, and you got to look at these loopholes and to see whether they've been closed or they've been opened even further to understand what's really going on with the tax bill. But there is some token, partial effort to recoup some of the massive $4 trillion to help pay for the rescue plan and the infrastructure plan that's being, you know, put on the table. All the details aren't there yet. They'll come. But, boy, you watch the McConnells and the Rand Pauls and the corporations already, the Business Roundtable and Chamber of Commerce and those guys have come out vociferously against the tax hikes, vociferously, right? There's two ways to really stop legislation, and that is to gut the actual wording in the legislation, and the other is to prevent the way of paying for the programs in the legislation. So we're going to watch this very closely in terms of as the tax proposals shake out here. Of course, the lobbying is going to be going on. There's no plan to pass this tax bill early this year, even maybe later this year. You know, I mean, they're going to try to next do the first phase of the infrastructure bill. Again, that's not until July, even in the House and Senate after that. Then they will probably take up the tax proposals late in the year. My prediction is they'll dump phase two, $400 billion for homeowners and home folks, infrastructure, human capital, they call it, development. That's not going to get through. I'd be very surprised, right? So what we got, all we got is the American Rescue Plan, $800-900 billion this year at most, which isn't enough to really stimulate the economy. You know, it's the same amount roughly that was passed in December, and that disappeared in a couple months. Will this disappear in a couple months too? Well, it'll be hard to tell because they're opening up the economy, you see, and that's boosting GDP. And you Democrats will no doubt argue, well, you know, our American Rescue Plan is boosting GDP, but it's impossible to separate out, you know, the effect of opening the economy naturally and the American Rescue Plan, how much of each is really stimulating GDP and recovery and jobs. But the politicians always say it's a job bill. But that's hard to tell. And then the infrastructure plan, as I said a couple times already, worth repeating, is that and by the way, I forgot to mention these tax, taking back the tax, the corporate tax, that's going to be a slow roll as well. The infrastructure bill is 8 years. They're proposing taking back the tax over 15 years. And, you know, these people play all these kind of games, right, with the timing, so it only appears on paper, right? They're not going to raise the money necessary to pay for it. You know, 15 years to raise the taxes and only an 8 years backloaded for the infrastructure. You know, it's smoke and mirrors. It's all mostly smoke and mirrors, I believe. I'll believe it when I see it. And, you know, they're relying on the natural reopening of the economy mostly. That's what they're mostly relying on. Okay, just a final comment on today's jobs numbers that came out. Oh, 916,000 jobs created in March. Unemployment rate falls to 6%. I said 916 jobs, not people. What about the fact that yesterday we had 965,000 people filed for first-time unemployment benefits in 1 week? 965,000. And in previous weeks, over a million a week, every week, filing for unemployment benefits for the first time. So we have 965 million in 1 week jobless, but for the previous month, we have 916,000 jobs. The unemployment benefits are people. These are people unemployed. 916 says jobs, not created. These aren't new jobs. These are jobs that are being restored, most of them in the service industries, leisure and hospitality, that's opening up. The economy is opening up. These aren't new jobs. These are old jobs that are being restored. And they don't say at what wage, you know, and how many hours of work people get. Most of these people coming back are coming back on either on even shorter work weeks. Therefore, they have less take-home pay at the end of the week, right? And maybe their rates of pay are different. But their hours of work are cut in many, many cases, especially in leisure hospitality. These businesses aren't opening up and saying, okay, everybody come back full-time the way it was. No, no, they're testing the water, you know, just like they're testing the raising prices water. And they're bringing people back little by little. And they're paying them less because they're giving them fewer hours, right? So what looks like a big job recovery going on, no, not true. There's not a big jobs recovery going on. We still have a million people almost a week losing their jobs and filing for unemployment benefits. How can you have a million people a week, right, and have almost a million jobs being created over a month? Well, you know, most economists don't look at these monthly Labor Department job numbers anymore because the COVID situation has distorted those numbers, which are a statistic, you know, with statistical operations on raw data. Those aren't actually jobs, you know, that's their statistic estimation of jobs. That's an important point to keep in mind. Whereas the unemployment benefit filings are a census. Those are actual people. It's not a statistic. It's a data. It's a data point. So a million unemployed filing for benefits data fact versus 916,000 over a month statistic estimation. Keep that in mind. You know, last year, 107 million people were unemployed at some point. 107 million. There's only 160 million people in the labor force. So over two-thirds of folks last year were unemployed at some point. And, you know, we've got millions, tens of millions who are long-term unemployed will never be able to get those jobs back. You know, under Obama, it took us 7 years to get the jobs back. It's going to take at least that or longer this time because it's deeper and even harder hit to the real economy to get those jobs back. And then, as I said earlier, we're running into the wall of artificial intelligence job destruction. At the same time, we're trying to get these jobs back because of this cyclical crisis that we're in. Does not bode well. Does not bode well, in my opinion, of where the job markets are going over the next decade. And, of course, with that many unemployed, wages will continue to be stagnant and sluggish, except for those industries that make capitalists big profits, you know, like tech and banking and so forth. They'll still be hiring there and getting good pay. You know, you only get paid well in capitalism if you produce even more profits for them, right? And if you cannot be simply substituted by software or hardware of capital, right? You can't be easily displaced. Well, if you're a data scientist, you can't be easily displaced. You know, artificial intelligence is not so advanced that it can handle the very complex and high-level decision-making that goes on in data science and artificial intelligence and so forth. You know, no, it can't do that. What it does do and will do is gut simple decision-making jobs, replace workers in simple decision-making in retail and so forth. And by the way, in Amazon, too. You know, Amazon doing all this hiring, right? Amazon is also piloting right now in some of its smaller operations, warehouses, how to get rid of workers and replace them with automated machines making decisions based on AI. Yeah. So all this hiring at Amazon is soon going to be gutted. You know, not soon, but by middle of the decade, we're going to see more and more layoffs. These jobs are temporary, right? So the workers better organize real quick, as they're doing down in Alabama, hopefully, and do something about getting some better benefits and wages and security and working conditions. You know, we'll track that. You know, we'll be talking about Amazon and the election and the PRO Act to try to restore unions here in coming weeks, just as important. Okay, I think we'll probably end the show on that note here. Again, keep in mind that all this infrastructure is on paper and you won't see much effect, and the AARP is not as great as they say, and the tax cut is not as, our tax hike is not as big as they claim. Progressive Radio Network.